Welcome to Pining for Penny Pod. I'm Heather.
And I'm Emily. This is a fan podcast to summarize, discuss, and dissect the whole Armand Gamache mystery series by Louise Penny. We are going book by book in the order they were written, just a few chapters at a time.
And most importantly, we're here to enjoy some wine, scotch, beer, cafe au lait, tea, and pretty much any food described in the novels.
Disclaimers, we may have some spoilers for future books, but we will do our best to not ruin any big things. Also, and this is very important, we are not Francophones, nor are we Canadian.
No, actually, we are recording this podcast from lovely Houston, Texas, so please excuse our French.
So, should we start with our French-ass name segment?
Let's do it. I actually added in one word this time.
Wow, that's super impressive.
Usually I don't even notice them.
It's because I'm just such a Francophone. Such a Francophone. You're just like naturally reading
exactly.
It.
You know exactly what everything means.
You go in and out of English and French just like that. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a couple refresher words.
Okay.
I feel like it is smart to just redo some of them, considering I haven't actually learned any of them.
Correct.
So, okay, so the first one is allô.
Allô.
And it basically, it has so many meanings. I tried to look it up online, but it's like a connecting word. So it either means then or so or therefore. Like, you can use it in a lot of different ways. So I'm not sure how it was actually used in the book. But to me, I'm pretty sure it was the only italicized word. So it wasn't in a phrase.
Okay.
So maybe just like, so. Or
that's,
like.
Yeah, that's a handy word to know, though, if you're trying to learn French.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just one word for many different uses.
Yes, exactly. So that's that. The next one is also a refresher word. I've definitely used it before. It's voyons.
Voyons?
And voyons. It's a conjugation of the word voir.
Oh.
V-O-I-R, which is to see.
Right, like voyeur.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Similar base.
Okay.
But yeah, voyons is like, it's technically let's see. But again, it's used in a lot of different phrases, and it can mean a bunch of different things.
Okay.
Like, that don't, like, directly translate. And I think in the book, it was when people were kind of, like, angry and exasperated with each other.
Okay.
And they were just like, voyons! So maybe, like, yeah, how can you not see it? Or, let's see, like, you know what I mean? Something like that?
Yeah.
But I don't know
exactly
the meaning of what they meant.
Okay.
But it's fun to say.
Yeah, I like it.
Voyons. Voyons. Okay, and my last... Oh, no. Okay. Yes.
Ooh.
Un agent provocateur.
Oh, very nice. Un agent provocateur. Provocateur.
Yeah.
Provocateur.
Oh no, oh no. Provocateur.
Provocateur.
Yeah, there we go.
Like provo and then couture.
Yeah. Couture. Yes, like couture.
Exactly. Provocateur. Okay.
And what do you think that means?
Provocating agent.
We'll see. Like, a provocative agent. Like,
Agent Nicole.
Ooh, get it, girl.
I would like to see her on, like, a remodel, like a makeover, and just, you know, help her out a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, her whole thing is definitely, like, she's sloppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good word, I feel.
Just make her outside match her inside.
Aww. She's gonna be, well, we'll get there. Okay, so the last one is, everyone should probably know this, but I figured I'll throw it out there.
Yeah.
It was just, mesdames et messieurs, and that's ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
But yeah, mesdames et messieurs.
Mesdames et messieurs.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm. The one word I have to contribute, Yes, yes.
It's so good. Do it.
Bulls.
Just bulls. And what does that mean, Emily?
It's a bull. But distinctly like a coffee bull.
A coffee bull?
Yeah.
What's a coffee bowl?
It's a bowl.
Bowl.
A bowl?
That they put coffee into. Like a café au lait.
Okay, so like a mug, but one of those like lower, wider ones that fits more.
Like a bowl.
Like a bowl. As opposed to a bowl.
Exactly.
Okay, I see, yes. I see. I'm so glad you found that word.
You're welcome. And I was excited to see it.
Yeah, that does remind me, like, when I was in Quebec City, when I got a coffee, it was in one of those bowls. Now I feel like I'm doing, like, a weird accent that's not French.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're on our very last episode.
What?
Of the Cruelest Month? So excited.
Yep.
The third book. That's really awesome.
Yeah. Chugging along to number 4.
We're crushing it.
Yep.
So yeah, this is our last book. So guess what? We're doing the rest of the chapters. Whatever's left, it's getting done right now. Let's go. There's a lot of info.
Who was the murderer?
Oh my God, we're going to find out.
We are.
And not for many more chapters. You know, like
just a couple more.
Okay. So let's start with our first weekly investigative report, where we summarize the chapters from this week's reading. So I'll start with chapter 38. So Gamache is woken up by frogs in the early hours. He's obviously at the B&B.
Like bullfrogs?
Like bullfrogs. No, but just imagine like being in like the country, because like, you know, there's like no people in this town and there's not a lot of city noises. Mm-hmm. This neighborhood's generally pretty quiet, but you don't hear like animals.
No.
But you do when you're in Three Pines.
Correct.
And other places like that. So he just like gets out of bed and goes down and sits by the fire and is all cozy and is thinking about the case. And like very shortly after that, Beauvoir comes down and he's like, those goddamn frogs or whatever. And then he's there and they're discussing the case. One thing that they're discussing in particular is this missing cheerleader. I don't know if you remember, but in the yearbooks, there was like a not pictured lady in the cheerleading group.
Yeah.
So, and her name was like Jean or something like that. So they were like, oh my God, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway. They find out later on through another yearbook that this other Jean Potvin, she's actually black. So this Jean is definitely not Jean Chauvet.
Gotcha.
Because she's white. So that cuts that theory. Okay. And then Jean comes down. So now it's like Gamache, then Beauvoir, and then Jean. Mm-hmm. So they have a little like private moment with her in the early hours.
By the fire.
Yes, by the fire. It's so cozy. And it's just a casual murder investigation. She could be the murderer. She could be. And they're just up at like 2 a.m. like sitting next to the fire with her. It's my favorite part.
Drinking some drinks.
Yes, having some drinks. So, you know, they all can't sleep. And they kind of have, like, a little discussion about whether they believe in magic or not. And, of course, like, Jean-Guy's, like, absolutely effing not. You know, but then, of course, he's super, like, he's superstitious. Yes. Though. So it's just, like, funny because it's him, you know?
Yeah.
But, for example, oh, no, I think I'll tell you later. So, anyway, he goes back to bed. He's like, I'm out. I don't want to talk about magic anymore. And then Jean tells Gamache about why she came to Three Pines, and it was because of the flyer, and the saying on the flyer that was written in, it said, where the ley lines meet.
Mm-hmm.
Easter special. So she was like, oh, that sounds cool. And that spoke to her because, do you know what ley lines are?
Please describe them.
I don't really know, but the person spelt ley wrong, so they wrote L-A-Y instead of L-E-Y. Uh-huh. And the L-E-Y lines are just like places that people have found in the earth where there's more energy, essentially.
Sounds lovely.
Yep. So energy, then like, you know.
Not to be confused with longitudinal and latitude lines.
Yeah, no,
that are just completely imaginary.
Those are ley lines, L-A-Y lines. Yes, these are like, you know, you can feel the energy there. So that called to her. So that's why she wanted to come to Three Pines. And then Ruth Zardo. Oh, she's back at home thinking about what Gabri had said about cracking the egg open. And she's like going it over and over and over in her head. Like, I couldn't have done that. I'm like, no, it can't be right. Blah, blah, blah. And she's feeling terrible about helping Lilium out of her shell. And just read this part. It's really beautiful. Just the thoughts that she has and everything. But she kind of comes to the conclusion that kindness kills. Mm. And it kind of explains pretty much Ruth Zardo in a nutshell, because that's basically why she's mean to everyone that she loves. So if she loves you, she's going to be mean to you because she thinks that kindness is sometimes a bad thing.
Well, what is that from Wicked? That saying, no good deed goes unpunished?
Yes.
Yes.
That is a good tie-in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me think, like, how long has she been living her life like this and why? Right?
Yeah.
It does talk about it a little bit in the book. I don't know if I summarize it or not, but it's really good. Just read it. and then it's the worst thing that ever happens, and she picks up the blanket that Lilium's in, and she doesn't need the blanket anymore because of the little, no, she's not a duck. She's a goose, right? Mm-hmm. Or she's a goose?
Yeah, I think they're a goose.
Yeah, she's a goose, and she's passed away. She probably wasn't going to survive.
Right.
She wasn't even going to make it out of the shell if it weren't for Ruth, so she gave her a few days of beautiful life and love that she got to meet her sis and her mommy.
Yeah.
But I cried. So
understandable.
That was terrible. And then, meanwhile, Clara, after that dinner party, gets an idea for her painting. Bam! All right. That's the end of the chapter. So now that we're done with our summary, it's time to do our quick quote corner, where we highlight our favorite quotes from the chapter we just reviewed. So, my favorite quote from Beauvoir was, "Fucking frogs," said Beauvoir a few minutes later, shuffling into the living room. "We just got rid of Nickel, and now the frogs start acting up. Still, they're better looking and less slimy."
Oh.
You know, he really...
Oh, Nickel!
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, doesn't love her. Okay. So on page 257, I have to read this Ruth Zardo poem. Do I though?
Do you think Louise Penny wrote these poems, or are these like actual poems?
I always wondered that, because damn, she's a poet and a novelist.
It's multi-talented.
"When they came to harvest my corpse, open your mouth, close your eyes, cut my body from the rope. Surprise, surprise. I was still alive. Having been hanged for something I never said, I can now say anything I can say. Before, I was a witch. Before, I was not a witch. Now I am one."
Mm.
I was trying to think, like, what that just, like being, what's the word, persecuted?
Mm-hmm.
For something that you didn't do, then, like, gives you the freedom to... say whatever you want. Like, I don't know.
Or if you've already been punished for something.
Right.
And then, people already have that idea, then you just...
Then you are. You become what... Yeah. But that's what she was writing when Lilium was dying.
Oh, so...
Yeah, so I think it has something to do with her role in, like, Lilium's death, too.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Oof. Ruth. Killing me. Absolutely killing me. Okay, so let's get into our bistro brief, where we discuss our favorite foods consumed, how likely we are to eat them, and what we're currently eating and drinking right now. Okay, so at the dinner party, they had a pear and cranberry tart from Sarah's Boulangerie.
Sounds delicious.
Sounds good. A little bit out of season for us right now. So we had a berry tart.
Yeah.
Is it all berries?
Was it all berries?
Strawberry, blueberry, raspberry.
Yeah, I think it was a berry tart.
It was a berry tart.
Mm-hmm.
It was delicious.
It was.
From the...
Whole Foods.
Hashtag Whole Foods Bakery. Yes.
So convenient.
Yeah, seriously. Emily lives on top of a Whole Foods.
I do.
Yes. They also were having handmade chocolates from Marielle's Maison, wherever that is.
Yeah, those also sound really good.
That sounds really good. There's like a chocolatier in Central Market, so.
Oh, that's true.
I should have gone up in there and got some handmade.
Couple pieces. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next time. I love that they're just snacking on cheese and bowls of fruit after dinner, too. Yeah. Like, that's like an after dinner snack.
Well, there's a lot of, like, some desserts are just cheese.
You're right. Cheese is a dessert food, yeah. Isn't it?
I wonder why that is. Is it just like an extra, like, you're not going to eat as much cheese because you're already full.
Mm-hmm. It's way better to eat cheese after your meal than before your meal.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me right now.
But then I wonder if, like, something about the milkiness of it, mm-hmm. could it help settle mm-hmm. a stomach?
Like, coat the...
Yeah.
I bet it could. Hmm. We don't do it here.
No.
We need to.
We could start that.
We could start it mm-hmm. here in Houston, Texas. Start to get French-Canadian AF right here.
Yeah.
Okay, so... The reason I wrote this down was because during their discussion of magic, I think Gamache was telling Jean about Zhang-Gi's superstitions and how he always has to eat his Italian poutine with his left hand, specifically.
Oh.
Before his hockey games.
Makes sense.
So, Italian poutine, specifically with the left hand.
I wonder, maybe it's like helping to warm up the left hand a little bit more?
Definitely.
That's fascinating.
No, I know. But then I was like, oh man, I really need to eat Italian poutine.
It sounds pretty amazing. I'm surprised that there are not more recipes for Italian poutine on Pinterest. I saw one and the picture was very disappointing. So,
oh.
Yeah, it was like something you would get from an upstate New York Italian restaurant with the foil container, a bunch of fries, and then just... sauce and cheese on top.
In New Jersey diners, like disco fries are like the number one thing to get, but it's essentially poutine, like regular poutine, so it's gravy fries, but with the cheese curds.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking it would be just like that, but instead of the gravy, it would be like marinara sauce. And that's basically delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to need to make that at some point.
Yeah, we could put that one in our back pocket.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Weekly investigative report, chapter 39er. Okay. So, Gamache and Zhang-Gi, they're now discussing the case over breakfast at the B&B, and Gamache is pleased to see that someone stole all of the yearbooks.
What? Why is he pleased?
I think he feels like he's rattled the killer.
Oh, I see. Yes.
But just as they are about to eat their breakfast, Gamache senses something is wrong. And even though Gabri has obviously brought them the breakfast, Gabri is like, no, go ahead and eat. And Gamache is like, no, what's happening? And, Gabri was like, fine. So shows him the news. And Annie is on it. So the news is showcasing Annie. She's rushing out of some doorway, has a briefcase. So. But Fantastic Annie just flips off the news, or the journalist, or whatever, the reporter person. And I was like, yeah, Annie, get it.
Nobody cares. Yeah.
She's feisty.
Oh, she's got it covered. Like, she's good.
And then on top of that, Gamache immediately calls Renmarie and finds out that Daniel has been taken into custody in Paris on suspicion of drug dealing. So, makes perfect sense. I was thinking about myself if I was in Gamache's situation. I don't think I had the brain space to really manage all of those different crises at one time. So, he handles it remarkably well. His thoughts immediately go to, I'm just going to retire, like, My family isn't worth this. His family is worth it. Saying that the reputation of his family kind of being dragged through the mud.
His job's not worth that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he does have the thought. He's like, maybe I can just buy a little place in the village, get one of those Sandon rocking chairs.
I love how he's going through all of this in his mind in this crisis. Yes. He's like, I might just get a Sandon rocking chair.
It's... It's really, if you're in a crisis and you're thinking of the alternative, you might as well make it as wonderful and easy as it is.
Agreed.
Where he just has to, like, figure out, like, little mysteries of, like, who stole the family recipe? Or whose mitten is this that got left on the pathway? So, yeah, so he's having those thoughts. But he does put a call into Brebeuf, because he wants to have a meeting with all of the head people.
Oh, okay. With the higher ups at the SQ.
Because he's upset. He's understandably so. All right, so that was a little segue. But then back to the murder, because there's still a murder happening that he's still trying to figure out. So they're all huddled again, and it seems that most of the people are convinced that Sophie is the murderer. But just as they are discussing it, Hazel comes in. Like, what kind of a place? This is not like any murder mystery I see on television.
No.
Where people can just, like, come into the huddle and just be there while they're talking about stuff. But Hazel does. She comes in and she's like, please don't take Sophie. Also, side note, Hazel is very upset, and she talks with Zhang Yi and Gamache about why, you know, it just can't possibly be Sophie, and if you take her, my life is completely over. Gamache asks Clara to take Hazel to back home just to kind of, like, keep her calm, and I guess keep her in one space. I don't know. There's another mention that Clara is older than Hazel.
Wait, Clara's older than
Yes. So there's a comment saying that Hazel looks much older as she's, like, curled up in the couch, even though Clara is older than Hazel.
Yeah, so I think that...
I can't wrap my head around Clara being... She's, like, 35.
You'll always imagine her as being 35.
Oh. Because remember, like, we had this conversation, I think, in the first, second book.
Yeah.
So I think in the first book, it made it seem like Clara was around in her 30s.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden in the second book, it seemed like she was mid-50s.
Yeah.
Like, that
still
doesn't compute.
No, I know. And then it's like the first book you read, it said 30, so you're just never going to get that vision out of your mind. And now we have the TV show, and she's very clearly in her... She's younger. She's not 50. She's in her 30s, probably.
Correct.
So... Oh, well.
Yeah. But to me, like, Hazel is a mom who, you know, and she has, like, a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah, exactly.
And she makes casseroles. So she just, like, I feel like acts older.
She seems older.
Yeah.
For sure. That makes sense.
So, yeah, that was mind-spinning. Mm. But then, as Heather said, Clara had the new idea for the painting, and she's painting again.
Yay!
It's very
Wait,
exciting.
So Peter's stupid idea for the dinner party worked?
Probably.
Because remember, he was like...
Yeah.
I know the best idea. Let's have a dinner party when you're stressed out and need to make this painting perfect. But then it actually works.
It probably does.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
All right. So now back to the murder mystery. Nicole, she comes back to the huddle, and she was out of town finding out information. She comes back in. She was investigating Sophie and says that basically she was reasonably well-liked at school, got decent grades, and was the picture of health. Mm-hmm. So all of the unhealthy stuff that she would always complain to her mom about for attention just wasn't happening.
It's only around her mom.
Yep. And she also stated that she dropped off the ephedra, like a very diligent and responsible agent that she is. And Zhang Yi gets the results back that seem to... suggest that the ephedra found in Madeline was not the same as the ephedra that was in Sophie's bottle.
What?
Yep. So.
Uh-oh.
Maybe it's not Sophie.
How is there different types of ephedra?
Yeah, right? How is there different types? So it says that potentially the ephedra is more of a natural variety.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And so then just to kind of investigate that a little bit more, Zhang Yi and Gamache go over to Odile's.
Odile. No, but it's obviously Odile now.
Of course. And they get a pinch of the ma huang, which is the... I have no idea how to pronounce that, but ma huang.
Ma huang looks good.
Okay. It's the natural ephedra. So they they buy some of that.
From the store.
So just also interesting. So you know Gamache and his, like, little pilfering fingers for books. He goes to Odile's to get some of that natural ephedra. And he takes, like, just, like, a little pincher of it, and puts it into a little baggie. And Odile's like, you can keep that. He's like, no, I need to pay for this. What are those morals when it comes to pilfering all the books from the murder scenes?
No, absolutely not. He's like, no, books are one thing, but Ephedra, on the other hand, I can't pay for that natural shit that I can get off this tree in the woods.
Exactly.
Books, on the other.
Yes. I didn't have many quick quotes from this. Although there was kind of the happy image that I had when Gabri was dropping the breakfast off, which I'm going to combine the quote with the bistro brief. Because Gamache and Jean-Guy were sitting down to a breakfast of café au lait in the boule, maple curd back bacon, eggs with hollandaise sauce, and a side of fruit. And as Gabri is dropping it off, he says, yummy, yummy. Which made me giggle to myself.
He's dropping it off to someone else to eat. He's like, yummy, yummy. And that's what I'm missing in the show.
I know.
I want him to be like that. So Emily and I made some eggs Benny tonight.
We did. Well, yes. Heather made most of them. I whisked for a while.
Yeah, and we needed you to because it wasn't thickening. Mm-hmm. but yeah, it was easier than I thought it would be to make. So delicious. We got freshly baked English muffins from the Central Market Bakery.
They were really good.
Thick. They were fluffy.
Yep.
Yeah, they're way better than Thomas's crap. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Thomas, but the preservatives just ain't doing it for me.
It's not the same.
It's just not the
flattens,
same.
Flattens out the English muffin.
Yeah, they're so flat. Yeah, these were delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yummy.
So we had that, and then we had our tart afterwards. Yes.
Ah, so good.
So,
and
check out
fruit.
The pics. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is, the shortest chapter of all time. I'm so excited. Chapter 40. I was like, I'm only going to write the most important things that happened. It was also very short. So, this is a terrible chapter. It's really tense and upsetting for Gamache and for everyone who loves Gamache. So, okay. It's just the conversation between him and the higher-ups at the SQ. So, we have Francoeur. Yep. Mm-hmm. Brebeuf and I don't know his name. There's a P guy. Perot, maybe?
That sounds like that French investigator from Perot.
Perot. Yeah, I mean, oh, Paget.
Yep.
Paget. Superintendent Paget. Oh, that he's the one that says alors. So, gosh, yeah, it's just very tense. Gamache comes in there, and he basically is blaming them.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
For the attacks on his family, mostly blaming Francoeur.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty sure that he's behind the family attacks specifically, and he thinks it's all tied to the Arnaud case. He says he's going to resign, and they basically don't let him, because they're like, that just lets you off the hook, dude. But they don't ever, say that they were the ones attacking his family. They're just very upset with him. They're like, that's ridiculous. You're so arrogant that you think we would do this and blah, blah, blah. Like, we're gonna, you're never gonna live this down. It's just terrible.
It just sounds awful.
But Michel Brebeuf is there and tries to stand up for him.
Mm-hmm.
When they all go back and forth. Because, he's his, quote, friend. So, after that, he doesn't actually successfully resign.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah.
He's not going to have that rocking chair on the porch and the vines.
No, it sounds so much better.
It really does.
So, he goes back to med school to get another copy of the missing yearbooks that were all stolen. And he realizes that right then and there, we didn't lose the yearbook. Someone stole it, and I know who it is. But he doesn't tell you yet.
Oh,
but in that moment, he realizes he knows who stole them.
Huh.
And then he calls everyone to set up a meeting at the old Hadley house at 9 p.m., and we find a murderer.
I love his sense of drama.
I know. He's like, we're doing it. Because he just wants to draw them out. Because if he gets that confession, it's so much easier to prove it, because so hard
mm-hmm.
To get evidence and stuff. So I feel like he wants to draw out
the reason and the emotions from the murderer, and that's how he gets them.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Makes sense.
That's all that happened. Okay, page 275. I don't like need to write this whole thing in here. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So on page 275. Okay. This is just a little bit about secrets and murder.
Hmm.
Mm. 2, 3. Okay. So he's thinking about something Ruth said to him. It's that it's our secrets that make us sick. And he says, it was true, Gamache knew. Of all the things we keep inside, worse are the secrets. The things we are so ashamed of, so afraid of, we need to hide them even from ourselves. Secrets lead to delusion, and delusion leads to lies, and lies create a wall. Mm-hmm. Our secrets make us sick because they separate us from other people. They keep us alone, and they turn us into fearful, angry, bitter people, turn us against others, and finally against ourselves. A murder almost always began with a secret. Murder was a secret spread over time. Bam. So, yeah. You know, he always talks about how, like, murder is, like, something that festers over right. time. And in prior books, I don't think it's secrets that he said. I think it was something else. But I just liked how it was, like, the same theme, but specifically with secrets this time. Right. And it's like, what secrets are we going to find out so soon?
Can't wait. I love secrets.
And that's it. Yeah, me too. All right. So shall we find out some information?
Shall we? Yes. Chapter 41.
Tell me some secrets.
As I was reading this chapter and I got through the first couple of pages, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Because last episode, I had accidentally started reading chapter 41 and making notes on it.
Oh, did you get your notes?
I did get my notes. Okay. Yes. But yeah, now my notes make so much more sense.
Perfect.
Yeah, it all came together.
I love it.
So chapter 41. Gamache, as Heather just said, everybody's returning back to the Hadley house.
Like everyone, not just the investigators.
Correct. Yeah. Everybody who was there the night that Madeline died. And they all again sit in a circle, which I feel like is creepy because I think the chair that Madeline was in is still turned over on the floor.
Oh, it's all, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Set in the mood.
And I didn't write any quick quotes about this, but I do think that this whole kind of introduction that Gamache is talking about to the people is very poetic, and it just it shows his personality in someone who has a lot of caring, can talk, you know, really in a kind of a calming fashion, and starts to go through that everybody there has a secret. And one of those secrets, basically, is what killed Madeline. And he first starts to kind of lay out the case against Sophie. Mm-hmm. And he says she had the love for Madeline. She had access to the ephedra. She knew that her heart was bad. And Sophie is just looking very sullen over in her little chair.
Yeah.
But then he quickly turns the accusation towards Hazel.
Okay.
And basically says, but Hazel had all of those same, you know, reasons and access as Sophie did. But then added that Hazel had cared about Bolevu.
Mm-hmm. Bolevu.
Bolevu. Mm-hmm. And so as that little extra level of complexity. And then he turns to Sandon and sounds wildly uncomfortable, but turns to Sandon, and he highlights his love for Madeline, and then his anger towards Bellevue, because of the trees.
The trees, and, yeah, right, yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
And so his love for Madeline, how could she love this man who hates trees so much? And I just think about Odile sitting there, and obviously Sandon does come out and say that he did love Madeline.
I like that. I liked his honesty.
I agree.
And he was never going to act on it.
Mm-hmm. He never was.
I mean, that's really brave. I mean, because, like, if you know, like, you have some sort of feeling, but you know you'll never act on it because you don't need to or whatever, mm-hmm. but, like, you could just easily never say it out loud because it doesn't
right.
matter.
Right.
But to actually admit it, that's really interesting.
Yeah. So, exposing secrets, mm-hmm. Hazel's feelings towards mm-hmm. Bellevue, Sandone's feelings were mad at Madeline. And then, of course, Odile had the means to kill Madeline with the all-natural
And she ephedra. Would have a motive because of Sandone.
Right, because she really loves him, right. but also sensed that aspect of jealousy. Mm-hmm. And I think they talk in this chapter, too, that was part of the conversation that Odile was having with Madeline about, you can have anybody, but why do you... Oh, no. Wait, is it Guile Sandone? Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Yeah, because it's Odile and Guile.
Yes, Odile and Guile.
I don't know why they don't call him Guiles in this chapter. But anyway.
Oh, they just call him Sandone. Yeah, I know. Sometimes they do that, and that confuses me.
Yeah, me too. All right. Okay. And then they said, Gamache says, but we also needed a fright because you can have the ephedra, but you have to get something to get the heart pumping right. to make it do its exploding thing right. or whatever, yeah. heart attack thing. And that's where Jean Chaveau comes in, and she was the one who was able to provide the fright. So yeah, it's like literally everybody at this point could have been the murderer. But then Gamache brings out the brochure for the B&B, which brought Jean to Three Pines. So then Gabri is under scrutiny because he was the one who had invited the psychic, and it was also the brochure for his B&B. But he was like, I didn't write that on top of my brochure. So they're trying to figure out who actually wrote in that extra little tidbit. This is also where the mystery of Jean's true name is revealed. So, Chaveau is the name of magical caves that were found in France. Mm-hmm. And Jean Chaveau is the name of a medieval woman burned for witchcraft and associated with that magical cave. So she kind of took on that last name. So
what's her real last name?
What is her real last name? So then Gamache also throws the gauntlet down and reveals that Jean was actually the cheerleader with Madeline and Hazel in high school. And then that brings up how Jean had known Madeline before coming to Three Pines. And finally, Jean kind of breaks down and tells how she was really never the popular girl and that she only ever just wanted one friend. And she wanted the perfect girl. Madeline to be her friend, and that's why she became a cheerleader and was trying to fit in. And
were they friends?
No, not really.
Okay, she just wanted her to be her friend. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
So there was a lot that happened.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Gamache just basically goes around the circle and points out everybody's secret in a way, and like this is what could have caused you.
So uncomfortable. Everyone from the town is like,
Although, wait, was Myrna there? She was there.
Yeah.
She wasn't called out.
Myrna and Clara Olivier and Clara and Peter are all not cast suspicion, which is fun. In the TV show, spoiler for the TV show, gotta say that. Mm-hmm. They do a similar thing at the end of the first episode of the two episodes for this book, is that they like go through each of the townspeople and like kind of cast suspicion on all of them. So they do like take that, even though it's different characters and stuff, right. but they do that, so I like that.
Fun. There was also no food, which I'm glad, because who wants to eat in the murder house?
Not with the chair tipped over where this lady literally died.
Imagine just, like, snacking on some cheese and crackers.
I mean, Beauvoir probably is getting hungry at this point.
Probably.
You know what I'm saying? It's been a little too long since he's had food, so he might have that in his mind. Okay, yes, moving right along. We need to know yes. things. Okay. I can't even describe what was going on here. It's so hard to describe because it's so vague in the book because it's meant to be vague. Mm-hmm. But Gamache's big plan is to not only, like, reveal this murderer, but also to reveal... Riley, can you not do that? Don't like us. Go, lay down. his other plan is to reveal what the hey is going on with these agents, with, you know, like with Nicole and with Robert.
Yep, Robert
Lumiere. Because, yeah, we know something shady is going down and someone is planted there to get dirt on Gamache and to ruin his investigation and this and that. And so that's what this chapter is about. So he basically leaves everyone in the circle and they're like, where are you going? He's like, don't worry. Like, I'll be right back. You guys will all be safe. Don't worry about it. And he walks down this corridor and you're just like, oh my God, what is going on right now? I'm so confused. And guess who's standing there? His best friend, Michelle Brigou.
No.
Okay, I really like teared up in chapter 42 and 44 because you just love Gamache so much. And like, it is the biggest dagger. How can you just have someone who is...
The godfather of Annie.
Yeah, yes, the godfather of your children. Your whole life, you've been best friends with this guy, and he just absolutely stabs you in the back. It's like his life is like with Michelle is flashing before his eyes here, and like he's remembering how like he's the reason he got through his parents dying. Because if no one remembers... Gamache's parents were killed in a car accident, so he was orphaned at, like, not a young age, but, like, a elementary, maybe, or middle school age. So it's just terrible. And then the absolutely gross Agent Robert is there as well, and it's just all very tense. You don't know what's going on, but you have this feeling that, like, the Robert and Michelle are there, and they're, like, gonna kill Gamache, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're done. They don't want to deal with his BS anymore, with Gamache's BS anymore. So he's holding a gun, and Brebeuf, you find out that Brebeuf, like, Robert's working for him because Brebeuf said he would help him
rise
in the SQ. And Robert's like, you kill him. And Michelle's like, absolutely not. This was my friend. Like, I want him to, you know, retire essentially, right. But I don't want to murder him. And Robert's like, you're a pussy. I'm going to kill him right now.
I love Robert and how he just went from this like potentially shy child to like over the course of this book where he just thought he was going to like rise up and become like the head of the police department. Yeah. And he had like had all of these grandiose ideas for himself.
And to an intense thug.
Yeah.
Like a literal is that an okay word to use? Just like a really bad guy.
Yeah.
A criminal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, anyway, Brebeuf does have a few moments in the heat of the gun, holding the gun and everything. Robert has the gun to explain why he turned on Gamache.
Oh.
Okay. So this is a quote. I'm putting it here because I needed to read it because it describes it so well. So this is a quote from AD 960 from Abderrahman III of Spain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just totally normal history lesson here.
I'll know it.
Yeah, we all know Abderrahman, of course. Mm-hmm. It's the beloved. And this is a quote that Gamache, like, I don't know, and him read or something, and it really stuck with Brebeuf, so he wrote it down, and he keeps it in his wallet at all times.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I have now reigned about 50 years in victory or peace, beloved by my subjects, dreaded by my enemies, and respected by my allies. Riches and honors, power and pleasure have waited on my call, nor does any earthly blessing appear to have been wanting. You have it. Yeah. In this situation, I have diligently numbered the days of pure and genuine happiness which have fallen to my lot. They amount to 14.
Hmm.
Okay, I like literally have chills. It's so sad. Man. 50 years of everything that anyone could ever want, and he cannot find happiness. And that is Brebeuf's life. Like, I'm sad right now. That's so depressing.
Right.
Like, and so then he goes on and he's saying, like, I was always faster, smarter, better than you at everything. He rose to the top faster. He has a bigger family. Mm-hmm. He got married quicker. He has tons of grandkids. He's higher up in the SQ. And yet he looks over at Gamache and he's just a happy guy.
Yeah.
And that tears him apart because he can't
be happy himself.
Yeah, which is really sad.
And it's just like, one, yeah, that's really sad for you. That must be so hard. But like, and it's even harder that this is like your best friend too. Like,
right.
That the jealousy is so strong that you will turn against him because mm-hmm. of it. Because if you're jealous of him, that's essentially.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so smart, Louise. How did she come up with this shit?
Like, how did she find that quote?
How did she find that quote?
Adur Rahman.
My best friend. That poor guy. I'm going to, like, do so much research on him right now.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated.
I want to know about
AD 960.
His, yeah, his ruling.
Mm-hmm.
Want to know?
Was depression, like, always a thing?
Okay.
anyway.
I think so. Yeah, they talk about it as, like, evolutionarily, potentially at times, advantageous. So it got people to slow down and rest.
Mm, that's really interesting. Mm. I wonder what was going on in AD 960 in Spain, the third of Spain.
How do you think they managed the bathroom? I always wonder that about back times.
Well, for people of this person's stature, I would imagine he shat in a pot and someone took it away for him.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Buried it in the backyard. anyway, it gets super intense. Robert's holding his gun up and he's like pointing it kind of at Gamache, and Zhang Yi comes running down the hallway and he holds his gun up, and then he's pointing at him and he's pointing at him, and it's very intense. They're just pointing at each other and he's like, I'll shoot you. I'll shoot Gamache if you don't put your gun down, Zhang Yi, in 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then a shot goes off and that's the end of the chapter.
Terrifying.
And then you're like, what? Did Gamache just fucking get murdered? Or did Zhang Yi murder Robert? Or what the hell happened? I wrote the same. I mean, it was similar thing to your chapter. As there's, I already did my quick quote.
Right.
But there's obviously no food because it's a completely vomit-worthy chapter. Despicable humans.
Yes. So, yeah. The next chapter leads right back into, there was a gunshot.
Thank God. Please tell me what happened. I read it, but I need to know now.
So, Clara, she jumps at the sound of the gunshot. Everybody else is also jumping, like, what was that noise? And then goes through a scene where Gamache, Zhang Yi, and Lemo, they're
Robert.
All fighting. Robert. They're fighting on the floor, trying to get the gun. But then, Nicol, she steps in, and she's holding her gun to Robert. And Robert, tries to get the gun from her, but she refuses, which is amazing. She's like, no, I'm not giving you this gun. And it's a really fantastic moment. And Robert is kind of like, are you an idiot? Give me the gun. She's like, no. Then her phone rings, and Gamache is up, and she answers the phone, and she's talking. And she's like, yeah, no, he's right here. It sounds very serious, and then passes the phone over to Gamache, and it's Nicole's father, which is freaking adorable. So in this very serious moment, guns are raised, shots have been fired. Nicole takes a phone call from her father, and then hands it over to Gamache so that he can also talk to him. And Gamache is like, yeah, no, Nicole, she's fantastic. Yes, I would like to come over for tea. So Gamache is going to go over and have tea with Nicole and her father.
Just mid-shooting.
It's fine. Just planning this all out. Very cool. And Robert is now just like looking wildly back and forth from Nicole to Brebeuf, not understanding what is happening because, of course, he's an idiot. So it all kind of comes out that Gamache had been in the works with Nicole for about a year planning this out, which is just amazing. Like, what was it at the end of the last book that Gamache was like, you know what? I'm going to trust Nicole with this biggest secret ever.
I know. That's such a good point because...
And bring her in.
Yeah. He sees things in people.
He does.
He knows.
And then Nicole, like, from the other book, she never had, like, the presence of mind to, like, be able to see outside of herself.
Right.
But clearly...
She's learning.
She is learning.
Because that's what he does. He teaches people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't find someone that's naturally talented. They don't need him.
Yeah.
So, she's learning. Guys, she's good. She's not bad. And that's why we could say that we like her in the show, too.
Exactly.
But it's sad that there's not going to be that surprise of her being good. But this book is amazing.
Yeah. No, I love how Robert just kind of gets put into his place. So it wasn't Francois, it was Brebeuf. Mm-hmm. And Gamache, you know, was just completely heartbroken that Brebeuf has turned on him. But then there's a little bit of levity that comes.
I'm sorry, but what was the gun, gunshot? Did anyone get shot?
Nobody got shot. I think it was...
Did she just, like, surprise
Robert,
them?
Yeah, Robert, I think he did fire the gun, but he got hit with a rock.
Oh.
Yes, Nicole. She had found some rocks or something in maybe Zhang-Yi's jacket. Somebody had rocks, and she hit Robert
with a rock. So when he shot, he missed.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, got it. Nothing was killed in this chapter other than Gamache's friendship. With Brebeuf.
His heart was killed. Okay, got it. So, moving on.
A little bit of levity is Gamache goes out into the hallway and he just sees this flood of people.
They're like terrified.
I just imagine, like, it's a dark hallway, you can't see much. Gamache holds up a flashlight and you just see, like, a bunch of terrified faces.
Yes.
But they also say that they were coming to rescue Gamache.
Oh. They're the best.
They're coming together. Yes.
They're so cute.
Yeah. So now, after all of that, the Brebeuf, the gunfire, the Brebeuf and Robert being taken away in handcuffs, after all of that, they go back to the circle.
And they He's not done, folks.
How do you compose yourself after that?
He's got this.
So they... return to the circle, and he puts on the Gamache face again to talk to them all about who the murderer was. And so finally, he turns to Hazel.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And speaks to how she was forever the shadow to Madeline.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say Hazel surrounded herself with people that needed her. They highlight that near enemy again, that it, like, is pity for compassion, because she needed to feel like she was needed by others. And
right.
So she saw that when Madeline came back, that she potentially was somebody who needed her now. And so she was kind of at the top of her game.
Then why'd she kill her?
Because... So they do unravel... So... They unravel why Madeline wasn't killed on Friday night, because that was part of the question. Like, why wasn't she killed at the first seance? Hazel had tried. She had put the ephedra in the casserole that she fed everybody. She didn't tend, but she, like, sent over a casserole.
I see.
And everyone ate it, and they were all horrified. They're like, you poisoned us?
Yeah, but they don't have heart conditions, and there wasn't anything scary.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, the first one wasn't that funny.
Yeah. Or, sorry, it wasn't that scary or something like that. Yeah.
But they did say that was why Bolevu couldn't sleep at all that night, because he had some extra stimulation happening. The reason why Hazel ended up killing Madeline was because she always felt like she was in her shadow. Mm-hmm. And then from the yearbook, what was written in Hazel's yearbook was that she never got mad. So as somebody might read that as, like, you never get angry, Hazel kind of took that as you never got mad. You were always one step behind her.
Right.
You would do something fantastic, but then Madeline would just do something that outshone her. Like, Hazel had this really, like, successful production of, like, a musical, but she never really got any credit because Madeline was in it, and she got all of, like, the credit for being, like, fantastic in it.
Yeah, so then she moved back, and it probably was too much for her to handle.
So, right. So she, when she saw Mad coming back, she thought, she looks sickly, she needs help, I can help her out. But then the town just started to kind of gravitate towards Mad.
Of course.
So Volevu, who Hazel at one point had maybe hoped that she'd have a romantic connection with, fell for Madeline. And then Gabri with the AWC, the women's
group. Right. It's like Hazel wasn't a part of it and Mad moves back and then instantly she's a part of all these things.
Right.
And yeah.
So, yeah. So she was feeling overshadowed by her.
Yeah. So again. Murder. Duh.
It just got to be too much.
Yeah.
But the kicker, the real kicker of all of this is that Hazel didn't know that Madeline's cancer had returned. And so she was going to die anyway.
Right, at the beginning, or in the middle of the book, they're like, who would kill a dying woman?
Exactly.
Like, you just couldn't wait.
Right, and I don't even think she knew up until that moment that the cancer had returned.
So she just found out.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
That is incredibly brutal.
But also, just don't murder someone.
No, you really shouldn't.
Just really don't
let nature take its course. The other... You know, you reminded me of that quote me of the 14 days. Mm-hmm. So as Brebeuf is being taken away, one of his thoughts he has is that he's thinking about that quote and he thinks to himself, most of those 14 days, that if he's comparing himself to this person, many of those 14 days have been spent with Gamache. And he's just realizing how much of a maybe mistake that he made.
I just got my period today, and I am tearing up so easily right now.
That hurts.
Damn.
Yep.
That really hurts. Okay. We have the last chapter, chapter 44, and it starts with a very sad Gamache. Because, you know, like, it's all over now. It's kind of like the aftermath, and he's just, like, kind of going back to regular life, and... this murder's been solved, but, like, his heart's broken. So, some wrapping up things. Robert was charged with assault and attempted murder. He's going to go to prison for a very long time because it was, like, on a cop, too, you know?
Yep.
But Gamache, like, couldn't bring himself to put any charges against Brebeuf. However, Brebeuf did resign a broken man.
Oh. Just no happy ending whatsoever.
No. No. This part, I was also literally crying when I was reading it. I'm crying again right now. So Gamache meets the real Nicole. He goes over to her house and meets his dad, who's, you know, super proud and stuff. But, you know, you get, like, he says he meets the real Nicole for the first time because, you know, he kind of wanted her to keep on that, like, nasty persona because it would help their cause. But, yeah, they're, you know, very loud and boisterous relatives, and she's kind of, like, on the outskirts of the family. And he's like, are you going to come in and, like, join everyone? And she's like, no, there's really no room. There's not really anywhere for me to go. And he's like, you know, maybe you just need to start making room for yourself. And... he meant that, you know, not only in her own personal life, but in her career. So hopefully she takes his advice and starts to blossom.
Agreed.
Okay. And then he visits Francoeur to apologize because he, you know, was blaming him for the attacks on his family. But Francoeur is just, like, such a douche. And he's so angry. He's like... you're disgusting. Brebeuf is a better man than you. And because of you, Brebeuf is gone.
No.
Yeah, I mean, he's just sick, you know? He basically is like, this dispute will never die. Don't fuck with me. And that was it.
He's awful.
He's terrible. But Gamache can handle it.
Mm-hmm. He's got it.
And then the Gamaches and Henry.
Henry.
They haven't talked very much about Henry in this book.
They have not.
And they go to Three Pines. And guess what they're doing?
What?
They are helping the townspeople give the old Hadley house a little remodel.
Ooh.
So, you know, the old Hadley house has been, like, the source of, like, negative energy and stuff for three books now. And this is something I really wanted to talk about. Again, this is a spoiler for the Three Pines show on Amazon. I have to bring it up.
Yeah.
I was so upset at the end of that episode when they burn the Hadley house down. Because it is just so not the spirit of Three Pines.
Agreed.
And, like, what they do here is they remodel it. They're like, okay, you know what? We hate this house, and it's been causing us all of this bad energy and blah, blah, blah. Like, we're going to bring life to it and, like, put our love and energy into it and make it something good rather than burn it to the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the townspeople, they're the people that they'll burn sage to, like, clarify. Or have these, like, soul-healing rituals. But yeah, I agree. In the show, I didn't really agree with them sneaking up to burn the house. It just makes them feel it's like they're devious.
Yeah, it's more negative and devious, and this is way more positive and uplifting, and that's like how that's who these people are. But anyway, yeah, I wrote way more full of malice.
Riley, what are you so itchy about?
She's itching very much.
She is. Are you okay? Can you see it?
That's so good. Okay. So, yeah, everyone's there helping, and the Gamashes go to help. Isn't that super cute?
Yes.
Okay. The only people that are not there are Peter and Clara, because guess what? She's about to reveal her new painting! Okay, Peter's really nervous, and he obviously secretly hopes that it's terrible.
And Peter!
he's ready to reveal. I'm probably going to cry again. This is his reaction. Peter wasn't sure he'd ever be able to breathe again, or need to. The portrait seemed to do it for him. It had crawled inside his body and become him. The fear, the emptiness, the shame. We find out that the painting is a portrait of Ruth, but she's kind of like painted as Mary, the mother of God. And here's another quote. Clara had captured the moment when despair turned to hope. That instant when the world changed forever. And Peter's still thinking, all of his fears and insecurities vanished, and the love he felt for Clara was restored. And then they laughed and wept for joy together.
I love that. Such like a healing moment for Peter.
I know, it's so good. And Clara's so good. She's so talented, right, Marley? Yeah, she's so talented. And I guess she got that idea from their dinner party, and it was like after Ruth had gone through, or no, did Lillian die after the dinner party?
Yes.
But yeah, it was like Ruth learning about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's still hope in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, and she painted it. Yeah.
It really sounds like quite a beautiful
painting. I would love to see.
Painting.
Yeah. Can Louise Penny paint too? Because she can write poetry. Yeah. She can write
I want
to
see it.
She describes art so well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be able to describe, I wouldn't be able to come up with that. Anyway, so then they get a six pack and head to the old Hadley house to help Peter. But unfortunately, she writes that he was only feeling a small shard of jealousy that might begin to fester. No, and you're like, dude, you just had this moment.
Peter, he's just such a flawed man.
Yeah, you're right.
But if we know anything, it might begin to fester. He needs to talk about that stuff.
He does.
No secrets. No secrets. That's when people get killed.
I think his reaction was all very genuine, though. So let's just have it be a happy moment for now. So then back at the old Hadley house, Odile recites a very bad poem that she wrote about the whole experience that everyone has been going through. Ruth shows up, and she fucking compliments her. And she was, like, pointing out certain things that Odile put in the poem. I'm gonna cry again! It's so good because this freaking Ruth, she's hates everyone and especially Odile, and she's actually bad, you know, but she's doing this simply because she's giving kindness another chance.
I love it.
And that's the end of the book.
That's it. It's Ruth.
Beautiful.
Ruth. Everybody's taking a 180 degree turn.
Yeah. Yeah, like
Hazel the nurturer is the murderer. Ruth the witch. The
best friend turning into the
traitor.
Traitor. Yeah. Ruth the it's really was a good ending. This is a good book.
It's a good book.
Okay, just a couple quick quotes. One is sad. It was from like Michelle and Gamache like saw each other across the street after all this. And it was just like, fuck. And one of the quote was, how bitter a thing it is to look into happiness through another man's eyes. Mm. Yeah. But moving on, because we want to end on a happy note. Yeah. When Ruth shows up to the old Hadley house, Gabri says, "Make way for the duck and the fuck." And from now on, like, he's going to call Ruth and Rosa the duck and the fuck.
Awesome.
The end.
I love Gabri.
Yeah, he's honestly one of the best.
But is it a duck or is it a goose?
It's a goose. But it's okay.
That's fine.
So in our bistro brief, we had some sweet cakes and strong tea at the Nikolaev household. That's a great question. Sweet cakes. You'd imagine they're like little... Let's see. Let's see what the internet says. Nope. It's coming up with like...
Restaurants
called sweet cakes. Oh gosh. I have no idea. To be determined, friends.
Yeah, okay.
And then just casual six-pack for some house restoration.
Nothing wrong
activities.
With that. I did think about bringing over one of those non-alcoholic beers for tonight, but it didn't quite go with breakfast.
True. Coffee was better.
Coffee
was a better choice. So that concludes The Cruelest Month by Louise Penny.
It does.
Lots of tears. Good one. Good one, Louise. All right, so let's just quickly do our book ends in case y'all need some more reading suggestions. I'm going to get real dark again and probably start crying. The end of this book made me cry. Trigger warning.
Yeah, for sure. If you lost anyone close to you recently.
Yeah, yep. Eating disorders. Other... childhood trauma, dying relatives, beautiful story of someone, actually she's a Nickelodeon star, by Jeanette McCurdy. Her new memoir just came out. It's called I'm Glad My Mom Died, and it's pretty much about her childhood with her mom mostly, and then like it's in two parts, before and after. Mm-hmm. So her childhood with her mom leading up to her death, and then how she kind of recovered after her death. She obviously has a very complicated relationship with her mom and experienced a lot of childhood trauma. But then she also like was a Nickelodeon star, and that's not the main point of the book at all. But there is like a lot of really fascinating things about what it would be like to be a child star, and like. There's some stuff about, like, the creators at Nickelodeon and some inappropriate stuff there. And then, she suffered greatly from an eating disorder, so there's a lot in there about that. So if you don't want to read anything like that,
this is not
good. But it's really, really good. She's a great writer. She, like, talks about in the book that she, like, just hates acting. She never wanted to do it. It was her mom that wanted her to do it. So I really hope, like, obviously this book is amazing, but I really hope that she gets into like writing or something like that, you know, or like directing or something in the field, because I think she'll do a really good job. But yeah, I just finished it recently. Highly recommend. It's like a 6-hour audiobook.
Oh, nice.
It's really short. I love memoirs, but I really like audiobooks of memoirs because I like actually hearing the person who wrote its voice.
That makes sense.
And there's like a she does a really good job of reading it, like, being straight to the point, but, like, there's just a couple times where she starts to get a little emotional, and it really got me.
When I've been looking for audiobooks, that one keeps popping up.
Yeah.
And I keep just scrolling over it, so I'm really glad.
No, it's good.
Because I guess for some reason I thought that it was going to seem more like a comedy, and I wasn't.
It is funny.
Okay.
But it's not, no.
Yeah. No, I think really how you just, I think what you're describing sounds way more interesting.
Yeah. She keeps it light at times, and, like, there is definitely a sense of humor to it, but it's, I wouldn't call it comedy.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So do you have any good suggestions?
Yeah. So, as I was looking for a new audiobook, because I think I'm reading about three, like listening to one and reading two, in all the forms. So listening to an audiobook, reading one on the Libby app, and then reading one in paper.
You must have one at all times in every form.
Yes. Yeah. Because I don't always want to be reading my phone right before going to bed. No. So I'd like to have a actual book.
Agreed.
And then when I'm getting ready or traveling anywhere, I like to have an audiobook to listen to.
Yeah.
So the audiobook that I am listening to is called She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan.
That's a really pretty cover.
It is a really pretty cover.
How are you liking the voice?
Good. I think what kind of stood out to me was that a fan favorite narrator, Natalie Nadas. I don't know what else she's read, but she does do good voices. And the book itself, so if you kind of think about maybe like more of a grown-up version of Mulan, so it is about a woman who is fighting for her destiny in a way, and it takes place in like the 1300s China.
Okay.
And she just becomes like a huge player in these kind of battles as she's becoming like striving to like achieve her greatness. But the book itself, one of kind of like the main themes, and I think one reason why people maybe would gravitate towards it is that it talks about gender and gender identity in a really interesting way.
Hmm.
And it also kind of like from a cultural standpoint as well. Well, that makes sense.
Like, if you said it's like kind of Mulan-esque, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that is a lot about gender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's gender themes. There's not really ascribing to your own personal gender in a way. There's romances between same-sex genders. But it's coming from like such an interesting point of view. So I don't think it's necessarily spoiling anything, but the main character, the girl, her brother is the one that has the great fate for him. And she has a nothing fate. And then she ends up taking her brother in a way. So she becomes her brother mm-hmm. and goes to a monastery. Mm-hmm. And so from a young age on, she is her brother, and she believes that she has to be her brother in order for the gods in the heavens to bestow his fate on her. So she always refers to herself as a her, but she can't recognize her feminine parts because she thinks if she does that, then
yeah.
heaven is going to know that she's
not her brother.
Correct. And yeah. then she can't get she her needs great the destiny. Fate.
Yes. Interesting.
But then she spends so much of her life as a man that's also who she becomes as well.
Right.
So she didn't like start off as believing that she was really like the wrong gender in her body.
Right.
But it's kind of her idea of trying to chase something that changes that. And then there's another character in the book who's a eunuch, and he is constantly being told how beautiful he is compared to women. Because as a eunuch, they have all of their man parts chopped off
right.
at a very young age. And so he doesn't like have all yeah. of the testosterone to turn fully into a male or have all like the male characteristics.
Mm.
So he struggles.
So he's pretty. Mm.
But he struggles because he's so much of like feeling like a man inside. But then his outward appearance
isn't what isn't he feels.
Correct. So it's like these really interesting kind of like gender, sex ideas that are discussed and kind of explored
mm-hmm.
in the backdrop of two warring armies.
I need all of that. I need all of those things combined yeah. in one book.
So yeah, I've
and you're liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Yeah. All right, so those are our book recommendations for this week. And guess what? Next week,
we have a new book.
We have a new book, and I have the list right here, actually.
Okay.
We did Still Life, A Fatal Grace, The Cruelest Month, and guess what? The next one is A Rule Against Murder / The Murder Stone. For you British people out yeah. there, or whatever.
Correct.
Or Canadians, I don't know. Is it same book, different title? Okay. Yes, A Rule Against Murder is the fourth book in the Three Pines series.
Can't wait.
And that book is right here.
Can you read the back of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are we looking forward to?
Okay, guys. Here's a little sneak peek of next season. It's the height of summer, and the wealthy Finney family have gathered at the manoir.
Killing it.
Bella Chase.
Oh, no.
Bella Shaw? Shaw's? Chase? To pay tribute to their late father. But as the temperature rises, old secrets and bitter rivalries begin to surface. When the heat wave boils over into a mighty storm, a dead body is left in its wake. Chief Inspector Gamache, a guest at the manor, finds himself with a building full of suspects. With the hotel locked down, the murderer is trapped, but a cornered predator is always the most dangerous of all. Mm. So, we are finally not going to have a murder in Three Pines.
That's good. They need a break.
Yeah, Louise Penny knows what she's doing, and she determined it was time to get out of Dodge. But don't worry, all of our fun characters will come back at some point.
Yes.
And we know Gamache is in it, so.
Can't wait.
All right. We don't know how we're breaking this book down yet, so we'll let you know. We'll figure that out soon, and we will keep you updated. But in the meantime, don't forget Armand's words of wisdom.
I don't know. I need help. I'm sorry. And I was wrong.
Emily's always wrong, guys.
Always. I'm never right.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This podcast was recorded and edited by Emily and Heather. Our music is by Robert Sellis.